What's happening, boys and girls? My name is Jeffrey Scott Mitchell, coming to you from the ultimate remote location, the place where I was born and raised, Youngstown, Ohio, here spending time in my daughter's basement on one of the three Gazelle gliders that I either own or have access to across the country. This one doesn't have bricks on it. The one at my house, I put four bricks on it to give weight and a little bit more tension. So this one is like really easy. This one is just like, it's almost too easy. It's almost like cheating. But I'm just trying to get the numbers in. I flew in last night, red eye. Don't want to do that again. It wasn't bad, actually. Actually, it wasn't too bad. It was more scary than bad. The scary part was that I was going to fly all night, get minimal sleep, and then come here to granddaughter. Granddaughter is 2 years, and 2 or 3 months old. And constant energy, constant, continuous, happy, curious, stay engaged energy, smart, responsive, if I can use that word, and engaging, very stimulating for a 2-year-old. And she could say grandfather. It may come out like grandfather or grandfather or something like that, or grandfather, but she definitely could say it. And when my daughter says, "Get us the grandfather, grandfather," she knows who I am. And then she'd come and she even called me that a couple of times, coming to grandfather, grandfather. And I'd be like, granddaughter. And then when I came in, first time I saw her, she knew who I was, even said my name. She called me grandfather. I guess after looking at the pictures of, heck, right, since she was born, it didn't seem like it, but I was there, maybe once, I've been flying back here once every 2 months since her birth. And working from home, since we can work from home, I could work from here. The only caveat is now I have to take Wednesdays off. There are in-office days. If I'm not there, I have to take those days off. Use PTO. My daughter's internet is straight. I got a room, a setup. I bought a monitor. I bought a little cheap little monitor. Open box. To help, so I don't have to carry that. And I got clothes here. And since I wear the same clothes and I got clothes here, the only thing I really got to bring is my laptop. Actually, what I really bring is all this electronics to do all my recording, microphones, all kinds of stuff. In fact, security flagged me coming through. They said, "You got two laptops in there." I said, "I only got one." And then they said, "Well, you got too much electronics in there." I was like, "That sounds about right." My cameras and this and that. And they opened my bag and took out certain things and had it, re-scanned it through. And I was good, I was like, because I was at the airport, 2.5-3 hours early, just cruising, And full disclosure, I had one of the episodes where my stomach starts to do that thing and I get nauseous and I start sweating and I feel like I was going to pass out. And I had one of those episodes on the plane, and since I'm not vaping, I'm not smoking, I'm not doing anything anymore, it all seems to be digestive. Maybe the overnight thing, sitting in that seat, I'm definitely overweight, my pants, cutting in my belly, like right here, it seems like my circulation, my digestive system may be crimped or something, I don't know, something like that, but can't blame it on the vaping or the smoking. or that anymore. It's just, I just ate. I probably ate recklessly. I ate a salad that I made, which is probably more cheese and meat and mushrooms and dressing and croutons than lettuce. Did I take the rest of, did I eat the rest of that salad? I think I might have ate it all too, because I don't think I would have left it in the refrigerator. I might have, but either way, I ate a bunch of it. Then I got to the airport and I got some French fries. I just feel like eating. I've been hungry. My weight was down to 212 after the walk on Friday, which is really good from considering what I'm doing, what I have been doing. So, but then you know, I ate yesterday, which may not have been too bad. Got here today. First thing I did after I got the car from Hertz, because Hertz says that their rental place in Pittsburgh doesn't open till 8. And usually you just go blah, blah, you know, whatever. You book it at 8 because that's when, you know, the only time that you can book it online at 8. And then you just go to, you know, you go to the airport and they're open. They let you in. Or another, I think in Cleveland, 50 or somebody else who was there booked me in through Hertz because, you know, they all work together, whatever. 50 or somebody else, you know, booked me in. And also talking to the Hertz girl in Youngstown, who we've become to be friends. I'm kind of cool with all three of them. Because when I first started, I was telling them too, when I first started working there, and when I first started going there, the service was just bad. The service was just terrible. And I could be, and I, like I said, I'm watching the Gilded Age. I believe in class. I believe in snobs. And I just a certain level of service that I'm used to now. It's a certain level of comfort that I'm used to. And I'm at the point where I'll get irritable or irked if I don't, if I can't attain or have that or don't, am not presented with that level of service. And in this situation, you know, small town, small rental car center, whatever, blah, 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 even though it was Hertz, the service wasn't there. I was like standing there 10, 15 minutes, whatever. And they just, you know, I let them know. And they could see by the way I was, you know, my short answers. I gave them Clarence Mitchell. I let them know that I was not happy. And I think I might even have told them. You know, I said, I come from California. We're just not used to this level of service. Waiting here 15 minutes, blah, 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 whatever. And then, you know, a few more times I went there because, like, they're the only show in town where I can rent a car in Cleveland, drive it to Youngstown and leave it there. You know, one way. And that's cheaper than shuttle. Cheaper than Uber, everything. Because I don't need a car. I don't need to rent the car for the whole time that I'm here because things just sit there. And I'm paying $600-$700 to keep a car for 2 weeks and drive it twice. So I just rent the car. In fact, today, I rented the car at 6 a.m. Took it, dropped it off in Boardman at 10 p.m. I only had it for 4 hours, $84. So I paid like $84 plus gas. I don't even know how much gas I put in that car. Gas back here is like $2.92 a gallon. If that, $2.69, $2.79 a gallon. I didn't even check to see how much I put in there. I just filled it up. Might have been like $12 or something. And I don't even think it could have been that much coming from Cleveland. But, so it cost me probably $100. And it's worth it to me, $100, to be able to drive in to Youngstown by myself. Listening to, you know, the music I want to, the vibe that I want to. Seeing, you know, how the scenery has changed from fall to winter to summer. Right now, all the leaves are gone and the skies are gray. And I'm looking at it, you know, the farmland coming through Pennsylvania, the rolling hills of Pennsylvania, the fog early morning, you know, just and me and the music, listening to music of Dead Can Dance. And while I was waiting in the airport, it hurts for them to open. Guy had got it. I was there early, but I started getting steps and the guy got in front of me and, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I lost my spot, you know, whatever. I was so early. I was just like, whatever. And then a girl was there before him and he even let her go first. I was like, oh, cute, cute, cute. You know, because I was there like an hour before all of them. I was there like at 6:30, but I just didn't get in line. Anyway, I was talking to him, and he said he's flying to Spain. Right now, he's flying from Pittsburgh to Baltimore and then flying to Spain. And I was like, oh, yeah. I said, I've been to Barcelona. You know, I had to throw that. I had to floss a little bit. I said, yeah, I live in L.A. You know, I've been to Barcelona. He said, yeah. I said, you know the thing that struck me in Barcelona? It's because he said something about being on the beach where he was there. And I was like, yeah, you know what struck me about Barcelona? I came from London or somewhere. And I think it was from Denmark, actually. And it was cold and rainy. And I remember the airport. When I got to the airport, I got to a proximity. I saw the palm trees. And I was like, yeah. So being from L.A., I told him, yeah, I knew the weather was going to be right. But anyway, I was talking to him about Barcelona. It hurts. And I don't know why I got into that story. But, you know, they went ahead. I got the car. Drove into Youngstown. Went to Sparkle Market. Actually, I was on my way to Sparkle Market. I said, let me take a ride through the neighborhood. Rode through the South Side. Saw, you know, where I grew up. Looked at the rental property down my father's house. It's across the street from the rental car. From the rental property. He bought the rental property. He didn't do anything with it. We went ahead and put about $20,000 in it and got it to a point that where we could rent it out for like, I think we were renting it out for like $625 a month, and we paid $50 maintenance fee, $50 management fee. And just basically the only thing we see is checks. We either see checks or notices that there won't be checks because, you know, other activities had to be paid for, either be eviction notices or whatever, you know, so they handle it all. Only thing we see is the money. And the way these people talk, all you got to do is get you a property. They'll get you in this situation. And I was like, cause when I sold the house across the street, they were like, blood numbers. And she said she can get me this number for it. I was like, and she was like, all day. I was like, do it then. I'll take it for that. And I sold it and then turned around. It seemed like they selling it for double the price and it's not worth that price. It looked like somebody's working on it now. Somebody was in it. Looked like they were tearing it up. I don't know what was going on, but it didn't look like it was being treated right. And they tore down the house next to it. So now the houses on both sides of my father's house are gone. You know, we own the house across the street. It's like a really small one bedroom. That house, for my father's house, you know, I kind of grew up in, was like four bedrooms or something, and an attic and a basement. Just huge old house. It's a huge old house. And I'm like, I think they was asking for $55,000 for that. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, because I think people are buying it without even seeing it as an investment. To where, you know, they don't want to see it. They don't even want to see it or work with it. They just want to know that it's turning. You know, they don't really care about it or the neighborhood or anything. They just want to make sure it's turning. So I rode there before I went to Sparkle. Then I went to Sparkle. And I picked up some food, junk, purely junk. After I got sick and almost got that sickness, nauseous, getting ready, you know, pass out on the plane thing, that whole thing was going on just like it has before, right before I passed out, the exact same thing. It's happened to me years ago, but I didn't quite pass out, but I would just, you know, be sweating, get sick and feel like I need to go throw up or go to the bathroom or something. And then what happens lately was I'd stand up and boom, pass out. I guess they said my pressure gets so low, there's some kind of thing, what you call it when you have, not a disease, but a something, not a procedure, but something that where, you know, when certain trauma happens to the body or certain circumstances, the body just shuts down and you faint. And he said, it's not, you know, nothing going to kill you. It's just a thing people got, you know, so. But then, you know, last time I fainted, busted my teeth and, you know, made me get more serious about life and some of the bad habits that I had. And I'm slowly cleaning them up. And that was only March. That was like less than a year ago. Major. Tore up my lip, busted my teeth out. You know, I mean, it passed out, woke up, my two front teeth busted, cracked. And I'm feeling chips of teeth in my mouth. Lips split, ripped. I wake up and I'm in the bed. I'm like rubbing my tongue on my lip and it's all tore up and I barely remember some of it. Walk out into the, you know, living room towards the bathroom, blood on the floor. You know, so that was a wake-up moment. That wasn't the first time I passed out either. That wasn't the first time I passed out. You know, and so, you know, I got to get that under control. And I think I have. I got passed out going to Petaluma one time. Going to see P-Funk in Petaluma. Passed out on an airplane. Didn't miss the show, though. Ended up in the emergency room. But, you know, they treated me, checked me out. Because I passed out on an airplane. And they weren't going to let you go nowhere after the airplane. Until the medics and, you know, people got me there. And people on the airplane looking at me like, oh, my God. Because they must have saw it happen. And they're in shock and scared. And after you pass out, you feel good. When you come to, everything is fine. You're like, hey. And they were like, uh-uh. You know, and the story I'm going to tell, the story that happened was, she was like, I'm fine. Can I just go back to my seat? She was like, no, you're not fine. You just passed out 3 more times. And I didn't even know, you know. And then I remember leaving that on that episode. I was turned around, looking at everybody. Everybody just looking at me when I was leaving because they let me sit in the front seat. And I guess I had the whole plane, you know, saw me. And I waved at them and smiled. Nobody smiled back. I was like, okay. But anyway, made it to the show in Petaluma. That was when 3GP opened up. I saw the 3GP act. I was there live when 3GP may have debuted their show. And, you know, that's a video for another time. But that's the passing out thing. And as soon as I get to Sparkle today, junk, ham salad, Little Debbie's oatmeal cookies, Little Debbie's gingerbread, freaking marshmallows, cheese corn, Cheetos, barbecue potato chips. But these are barbecue potato chips and Cheetos and stuff that I can't get in California that I get every time I hear my ham spread, some ham, American cheese bread, you know, just that stuff. And marshmallows. They didn't have Jet Puff marshmallows, so I had to get the off-brand marshmallow. You know, I'm a Jet Puff guy. I got to have Jet Puff. There's a reason for that. And, I got 19 minutes on this. Is that true? Let me see. 17 says, yeah, about 17 minutes or whatever. 17, I can't see my glasses. But I only need to do like 2,000, and I'll be like 20 minutes if I'm doing the right speed. I don't know what kind of speed I'm on. Let's just face it. I'm just trying to get the number. And hopefully this week I'll straighten up. Well, not straighten up, but, you know, I'll be more focused. I think I got weather gear. You know, not full-blown weather gear like when I was going to Buffalo. But a portion of that stuff that should keep me warm in 30-degree weather versus the 10, 11-degree weather I was expecting to face in Buffalo. So I bought, you know, a lot of that stuff. And then I got so much stuff here. And my daughter's already dead. I don't need to bring anything, really. Just a laptop and my computers and my cameras and stuff, basically. And, you know, whatever I wear on the plane would be enough. Because I don't go nowhere and I wear the same glove. And I got a stockpile here of everything. Monitor, you know, everything's here. So it makes it real convenient. Plus, I could hang out with granddaughter. You know, and for her to call me grandfather, it is touching. It is touching, but it'll probably hit me later. But right now, for whatever reason, I don't know if I'm deflecting or trying to stay out of my emotions, but I'm about production. I'm about what capability, you know, getting things done. The rest of them people love her too much. She could do no wrong. You know, she could just, like my supervisor was saying about her kids, when she had kids, she could just sit there and look at them and they could do no wrong. Anything they did was just precious and wonderful. So even when they did something bad, it was hard for her to discipline or get mad because it was just so, you know, everything was just so wonderful about every little instance of them. And I think these people back here may have that for that. And I told them, like I told my niece, the problem with them is they love you too much. I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, so she grew up with that from little. You know, Uncle Jeff is going to come at you this way. you know, and I know her mother probably said, and you know, Uncle Jeff gonna have something to say, you know, and they probably already know what I'm gonna say because it's, you know, I'm consistent. They know how I think and what I'm gonna say and what I'm gonna think, you know, so I'm sure they're on top of that. And I don't mind it. I don't mind them. I don't mind my niece or the younger people understanding where I'm coming from and being able to process that and knowing that's just the way he thinks. You know, he don't mean no harm about it. He's just no hatred. Because, like, I'm a classist, and I let them know they're just different classes of people. There are people who are, quote-unquote, in the upper class. I mean, a better class than us and a lesser class than us. And I put it crudely like that just so they can understand it at their early age. Now that my niece is older, we can talk about what I, with a lot more granular, at the more granular level, and more clarity about exactly what I meant by that. You know, how the different races and the different social groups and the different classes, demographics, all, in my opinion, how to treat that versus how mainstream teach you that we're all the same, we're all equal and all that. Now, sure, we are at a certain level, we're all equal, but we're not all capable. And like Thomas says, and I say it again because it's one of my favorite sayings to hear me say, is I'll treat everybody fair, but I don't treat everybody the same. And I think, you know, equity versus equality. And, you know, growing up, my niece was young. You know, I'm probably with my kids, too. They probably knew how I felt about things. I'm not sure they did, especially about with the atheist stuff back then. You know, their mother's devout. Jesus, you know, love Jesus and God and all that. But they knew it. They understood how I felt. You know, they let them know and they could process it. And they saw that I didn't really care. I mean, I had passion for it, but, you know, whatever they wanted to be. That's on them. That's on you. You know, here's how I'm going to do it. Look how I do it. Look where it's gotten me. Look how I do it. Look how I handle things. Look what benefits or doesn't benefit me with the understanding that I'm showing you. And the same thing with granddaughter. But right now, she's too young for me to get anywhere near that. My thing with her is the discipline. Because there's things I can just tell her she'll do. And she won't do it, you know, for those people that love her too much. I was like, go in there, go in there and get clean butt. Get your butt clean. Go in there, something like that. She turned around and walked right over there. You know, like her mother be calling, Gianna, Gianna. You know, but they'll have a relationship that I'll never have with a granddaughter. And quite frankly, one that I probably don't want. I mean, one that I don't want to be that person. And what I was thinking, and you know, what was about that whole thing, I was asking, you know, my daughter about, I was like, y'all don't got no discipline there. Y'all don't know how to discipline. Y'all ain't up, you don't discipline. And she was like, nope, because none of them really, you know, they just don't discipline well. They just not their thing. I said, but y'all be ready to fight and go after somebody in a minute. And she was like, that's true. You know, it's not that they weak or nothing. It's just the discipline thing. They, you know, and I said, I wonder why, you know, I, blah, blah, blah. And then she asked me something like that. I wonder why, you know, but look at you. You didn't either. I said, that's true. But I had Clarence Mitchell in the house every day. My father came in the house in a day and he was staunch discipline. I mean, it was cut and dry. The line was drawn clearly how he felt and what he thought. Very clearly how he thought and what he felt. And since I was in his house and his son, there was a certain amount of ways I had to do things. This was never put to me that way, though. The way it was presented and laid out, it was never put that way. It was just expected. It just plain out what is expected of me. And I knew. And I'm sure I was told, don't do this, don't do that. But I was told in a bigger sense of what was quote unquote right and quote unquote wrong in the world of Clarence Mitchell. And so not only was I taught that, I was shown how to discipline. So I have no problem with discipline. I have no problem with discipline because I even feel comfortable doing it. I feel comfortable like that little 2-year-old, I take her pacifier from her. She'd look at me crying. It don't faze me none, you know, and I talk to her straight. I don't baby talk. You know, I tell her, I say, go over there, get that, you know, she'll do it. And then we'll be playing it. You know, it's not like, and she does have a little, it's, I don't know if it's fear or respect. I don't care what you want to call it. I think it works. I think you got to have a little bit of level of that. But like I said, the closeness I see with her and her grandmother, oh my God. They like friends and like buddies. They just the closeness that she has with her grandmother, my ex-wife, and her mother is, I won't have that. And I even saw that with my niece. I saw my niece and my mother talking one day, and the way my niece was just so relaxed and casual, and I was like, she don't talk to me like that. And it wasn't like in a bad, sassy way. She was just loose and free and, you know, it was like, open. And it was like, she don't talk to me like that. And it kind of hit me at first. And then I was like, I want it that way. I don't want to be that close. I probably don't want that responsibility. I mean, that's the easy way out. You know, and that's true, because I was saying to somebody else. In fact, I was telling the Hertz car girl who, you know, like I was telling that story, how the service was so bad. We kind of got off on the wrong foot, or I had to let them know that I wasn't used to this. You know, over time we got, you know, not close, but, you know, a lot better understanding. And we rode today and, you know, kind of had a little, not a heart to heart talk, but kind of a, because she gave me a ride back after I dropped the car off, because it was like too cold to walk or whatever. And she gave me a ride back. She had to shut down the store. There was nobody there. See, that's the kind of stuff to do. She had to shut down the store. There was nobody there. And when I got there, I had to stand there 5 minutes while she was washing another car. And I was like, you know, cause, and I see those two girls in there, you know, when I go in there, you know, more than once now, and I get to know their plight and their situation, and I have sympathy for it and understanding for it. And we was talking in the car about that when she gave me a ride back. And I forget what note I was going to say about that, but, you know, that was my day today. And I get here, and granddaughter remembered me, called me grandfather, and she's saying, yeah, you know, and like I said, it didn't hit me yet, because I'm about the discipline. I'm about, you know, what you do, don't do, how you respond, you know, what you do, how you treat your mother, what you doing, you listening, how smart you are, how many words have you can do now, how much you can climb, what you can do better, what you can't do. When I look in your eyes, what do I see? You know, what are you saying? And now she's saying things, you know, not quite totally clear, but she's trying to say stuff, and there's a conversation that she's having. There's certain words she'll say, certain words she'll just repeat that she hears, certain things I see her do with my cameras, or the way she looks at things, or the way she touches things. You know, I'm looking at all that, how she would play with certain things, how she'll imitate certain things, how certain things she'll do. I'll show her and she'll try to do it again. I mean, everything from, you know, her every time I come down here and get on the glider, she'll come and get on there. In fact, I came down here to do some steps today on this thing, and she was on it so much, I just walked in the circles. I let her just sit on it and play on it and, you know, figure it out. And she's actually doing her legs, because she's taller now. So her legs, she was able to do her legs a little more. Before, she was just so little, she could just barely, you know, she used to get on there. And I don't know if I was saying earlier, but there's pictures of, you know, me with her sitting on my lap. Yeah, with me with her sitting on my lap looking at the computer screen before she could do anything. Before she even knew what a computer was, before she probably could understand what was coming out of her eyes. She don't even look like the same child anymore. You know, sitting there looking at my computer screen. And I was like, wow, I had you looking at this stuff all your life. I didn't even realize it. You know, pretty much you've been seeing me, you know, come here and setting up a computer with screens and keyboards ever since, you know. And I didn't, you know, you just do what you do, and they're going to pick up on stuff. And it hits you one way, and it may hit you a different way. So, this thing says, no, that can't be right. It's got to be more than that. So I just wanted to come out here and hopefully this thing is recorded. I did a nice little recording about the George Clinton Walk of Fame, and it didn't record audio. I hope this thing is. In fact, yeah, I see it's on. I hope it's recording, because I thought the other one was on and it didn't get any audio. And it was talking about how my feelings, you know, towards that whole event, about that, the whole event and that experience. You know, and I went into it and kind of did the good job, and I thought, and it's just lost, it's just gone, you know. And then you get deflated, and you feel like you'll never be able to repeat it, that one, because it was in the moment. You can't relive that moment, repeat that moment, but, you know, you want to get the essence of it, at least the data down from it. So, all right, let me see how much time I've been on this thing. 30 minutes. Oh my God. since I've been on this thing for 30 minutes, so I should have 11,000 steps. See, once you get into it, once I started talking, I was only supposed to go down here for 20 minutes. I get going, it feels good. It feels good because it's like, what, maybe 10 o'clock here? Maybe 10 before 10 p.m., which is only 7 p.m. From my body, I was off today, I'm off tomorrow, and I could be off Monday. But I think I'm going to work because I got to take off Wednesday. So, you know, we're going to get that all figured out. We'll get that all figured out. Take my Claritin because I could have swore I felt my throat doing something or like I was getting a cold or something. And then last night when I got sick, it felt like I was going to pass out, that whole pass out thing, nauseous, sweating. When I laid down and it finally passed, it felt so good. When it finally passed, I just laid in that seat and went right to sleep like a baby. It felt so good just to get through that. Then I woke up, my shirt was wet from sweat. You know, my shirt was just soaking wet from sweat. And that's like, oh wow, you really did go through something. This is tangible evidence that you went through something. Because when you wake up afterwards, you're like, hey, yeah. And it just feels so good to have that pass and to be lay there and have my body, I guess, go back to the temperature, everything adjusted back right. And I curled up on that seat because there wasn't nobody. I had a whole row to myself. I curled up the seat and just went to sleep. And it felt so good. And to wake up and you think about your stomach. And like after I've been through all of that, first thing I'm thinking about is what I'm going to eat. And I know it's an issue. I know it's a thing. I've always had it. I think I've always had that, whatever it was, and I replace it with smoking or something else. But I always had a craving or a stimulation that I needed, and there's different ways I can get it. And I used to get it through smoking or nicotine or weed or whatever. Drinking, probably, even back in my drinking days, probably, you know, during my drinking days, it was probably that. I haven't had a drink in 30 years. Since 1989, 40 years, 30 something, 40, I don't know. Yeah, you know, it was 40 years ago, last year. I'm sure I commemorated the thing. I've been out in California for 40 years, came out in 83. So last year was 40 years in California. Now I'm back in Youngstown, granddaughter's fantastic, smart, just, you know, energized. Don't stop, you just sit there, you know, and she just jumping and laughing and having a good time. You know, and you just sit there and go, just laugh. Me and my daughter just laugh because she's just nonstop. And just, you know, she was showing out probably because I was here, feeling good, you know, just talking everything, just into everything, just looking and wanting to try that and jumping on the bed and going from this to that. Put Coco Melon on. She's singing Coco Melon, singing it on beat and singing it in time to the music. I've noticed that too, very, very much. You know, how she recognizes the words sung to the music on the beat and in the tone and the cadence, you know, right to the music, not just like repeating it, you know, afterwards. No, you know, she anticipates it. She knows when it's coming. You know, when the blink, 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 right on time. You know, that's the stuff that turns me on. Not how cute she is. Ain't she the cutest little baby? Ain't she the cutest little baby? I'm like, yeah, maybe. I'd be like, yeah, maybe, but that ain't what gets me. That's not what moves me. Just little different things that she does, like here, and she like used words like here or come here, or their mother says, you know, she may or may not have used before, you know, the first time, like putting in context what's going on, you know, understanding what these things are in relation to something she needs to happen at that moment. You know, and then one thing we're sitting there, she got to go around kids her age. She got to get around some other people. I'm old, I'm 60, that's my excuse. My daughter kind of older too, she's 38. No, 36, double 18, she said. And still, you know, we ain't 20-somethings. When we had them, we were 20-somethings. You know, we were a lot younger and, you know, life hadn't done what it has done to us. Not that what life does, what you've done, you get good at what you do, you get experience, so your life isn't as rough. You know, you're not like, your life isn't as intense, and you get, not lazy, but you get soft. You know, the better your life gets, the softer you get. And the older you get, hopefully, the better your life gets. You know, I don't have to work nowhere near as hard as I did when I was 20. Nowhere near. I didn't, and I don't have the energy at 60 to do what I did at 20, that I gratefully did at 20. And it, you know, is 30, 40, 50, more experience, more experience, more experience. Compile my resume or whatever, not necessarily a resume, but experience, where you carry yourself, just the whole demeanor, everything, your whole essence, your energy. When you walk into a room, you're just at a different level than you are when you were like 20-something. Anyway, 35 minutes. Hopefully this thing is recording. I guess I can do one for y'all. Swinging on y'all 2 times. For me, for the funk. And you know what I did? I turned the backlight off. See, I turned the backlight off because I used to have this, that light bulb right there on. I turned it off. I said, well, I have that one on. I just have this one on. It made it a lot better. Swinging on y'all 2 times. For me, and for the funk, and for family, for granddaughter specifically, and to see, I just want to, and for every elementary particle that has ever existed in any atom that ever was, is, or will be, in any universe, a totality of it all, theory of universe. Not theory of the universe, not a theory of the universe, but theory of universe. Theory of universe. Hypothesis of all as one. My name is Jeffrey.